From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The rapid rise of digital technology and the internet has changed our political landscape, how we communicate with our peers, and how we communicate with the whole world. One of the major lessons of the 2016 election was just how useful the internet was to those who wanted to hack our electoral systems. Fake news and polarizing memes skewed voting patterns, and hate flourished online. Today, companies like Google, Facebook, and Twitter are under fire from those who are outraged at the proliferation of fake news and hate groups, while right-wing extremists claim they're biased against conservatives. My next guest says it's the algorithms these tech platforms use that are the problem. Robert Elliott Smith is an expert in artificial intelligence. He's worked on projects for Oak Ridge and Los Alamos National Laboratories, the National Science Foundation, NASA, and more. He's a fellow of the Royal Society for the Encouragement of Arts, Manufacturers, and Commerce, and his new book is called Rage Inside the Machine: The Prejudice of Algorithms and How to Stop the Internet Making Bigots of Us All. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Well, thanks for having me, Sonali.
So let's get really basic, because your book is, you know, gets deep into artificial intelligence, and we should assume that most of us don't really know as much about it. When you even use the word algorithm, what exactly do you mean? What is an algorithm?
So an algorithm, it's an interesting word. It comes from the name of an Arab mathematician. Who then inspired one of the leading mathematicians in early mathematics in Italy in the pre-Renaissance era, really, Fibonacci, who then propagated the word, a Latinization of the word, and then Geoffrey Chaucer anglicized the word. And it's come to mean a procedure, a formal procedure of step-by-step things. In a recipe, if you look at the ingredients in a recipe, those are the things you put in the cake. The way that you put them in the cake and the way you bake the cake, that's an algorithm. That's the step-by-step procedure by which you do something. The algorithms I'm talking about in the book are the kind of algorithms that now work at places like Facebook and Google, and the artificial intelligence that people talk about these days. It's all algorithms, all step-by-step computer procedures. And so what I'm talking about is those procedures and why they have a tendency to do things that we might think are negative.
So how do companies like Facebook use algorithms? Because, of course, it's such a huge platform. They simply can't have human beings sitting there and deciding individually what goes in everybody's feeds. So they end up having to automate it. And so computer programmers write programs or algorithms to decide what to do, right?
You're right, exactly. And what happens when you're interacting with, say, Facebook or Google or Twitter or any of the platforms? What's happening is effectively what you do, what you click on, what you read, where you stall your scrolls, all that stuff can be captured. Things you fill out in profiles, things you fill out in surveys can all be captured. Things like the location of your computer, or if you're using a Fitbit, where you are on the earth and how your heart's beating, all of that can be captured and brought into the internet. And in fact, things from multiple sites can be brought together as data to tell people about what you're doing, what you're shopping for, where you used your credit card last. All of that can be brought together. Now, with the billions of people who are on the internet, that effectively means that there's way too much data for any human being to ever look at it and try to figure out anything about you. So what's going on is that algorithms are working on the internet and trying to figure out how to make somebody money effectively, how to, let's say, sell better ads, but place adverts that will cause you to click. And
of course, since these are all for-profit companies, Facebook, Google, et cetera, that is their primary goal above all else in designing algorithms, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you can think of it as commerce driven by click-through. Now, when that goes on, what they want to do is they want to say, well, what kind of content should I serve to you? And when should I serve it? You know, what should I be giving to you? And when are you likely to click through and buy something? By doing that, what's going on is they're breaking people into into segments, market segments, where they can be then be addressed by different kinds of ads. And ads are literally sold to very fine segments of people online. So when you buy an advert, you can say, I want people who look basically like this. Now, that breaking apart of people into groups is a kind of digital segregation, because the next thing that happens, we think about advertising, but what goes on at places like Facebook is they're also trying to personalize the content they deliver to you, because ultimately that content can also deliver advertising. So when you get a picture of the world through your newsfeed, it is unique to you, but it is unique to you because you've been placed into certain demographic groups. So you've been placed in certain groups and then you're served ads. I would call this targeting instead of personalization. Now, I'd call this a form of digital segregation. People are broken into groups and then delivered different views of the world. Then the next thing that happens is digital gerrymandering. So you have companies that come along, and Facebook has nicely segmented the world. So now people can come along and say, you know, I want to target specifically these voters because that could sway an electoral region that is critical to the next election. So the segregation that algorithms do, which is very base and based on very simple characteristics of people, then provides a tool by which companies, for instance, Cambridge Analytica, then try to gerrymander effectively the messages that are sent to people and therefore try to influence their voting behavior.
And so when you have algorithms that start to segregate people, as you describe, is that when we start veering into territory of artificial intelligence?
Artificial intelligence is a funny term. You know, it means an artificial version of something we don't really understand very well, human intelligence. And I actually think it's a dangerous word, because artificial can mean either something that's made by man or something that's a sham. And I prefer the term pseudo-intelligence. That's the term I'm trying to promote, because it's not really like human intelligence at all, what's going on. It's really mathematical procedures, statistical procedures, and we've labeled them as AI. And the reason I think AI is a bit dangerous is it sells to people the idea that these algorithms are thinking the way that we think. And I assure you, as a person who spent a lot of time in this field, that's simply not true. Algorithms do wonderful and interesting things that are very useful in many contexts, but they are not thinking the way people think. And moreover, the way that they think is really quite simplistic and can be quite generalizing about the things that it's treating. Nothing wrong with generalizing about nuts and bolts on a space station. There is something dangerous about generalizing about people. And in fact, that's the reason that algorithms, I think, are part of the political problem that we have today.
So essentially, because we have machines based on these recipes, if you will, written by human beings to try to approximate how humans think, we end up in this place where generalizations end up leading to bias, horrible racial bias, sexual bias, ethnic bias. Can you give us an example of the kinds of bias, or several examples of the kinds of biases that we see out of these algorithms that have, you know, sparked all of this attention that people, you know, have tried to figure out or try to get to the bottom of why this arises? Because it's tempting to think that there's, maybe a white supremacist faction working at Google that embeds racist things into its search engine.
Yeah, indeed. And I think it's important to say that, you know, I kind of list three theories off that typically about this sort of thing. The first theory is that what's happened is we're all on the internet now, and because of that, these algorithms are trying to figure out how we behave, and they're figuring out from our big data that the world's a very much more bigoted place than we thought it was. I'm not saying that's not true. There is some truth to that. Another theory is that there is an alt-right programmer culture out there that's effectively trying to manipulate algorithms to basically have misogynist or racist tendencies. There may be some truth to that. Certainly, there are people out there who are trying to influence the election and things like that who may have those feelings. I'm not saying others. What I am saying is that there's something additional, is that the natural tendency of the way that algorithms treat the world actually divides people fundamentally. Now, let me give you those examples you wanted. These are not things I found. They're well-known cases, but I have a slightly different take on them than most people. One is the famous unprofessional hair controversy. Apparently, a few years ago, if you typed into Google image search unprofessional hair, you got pictures of black women. No men, no Caucasian women, no Asian women, black women, pretty much exclusively. That's one example, which I'll come back to in a minute and explain. Another example is this has been pseudo fixed by Google, but it used to be if you typed into Google search, are Jews, the next suggested word was evil. And what's even more strange than that is
you just start typing the search, are Jews, J-E-W, are Jews,
and they autocomplete that you see Google searches would say evil is the next word. And strangely, are women also turned up evil?
As one of the possible
as the number, it was at one time, it was the number one possible search. And if you clicked that, by the way, you got some really quite ugly material. Right. And then probably the most disturbing example is a few years ago, it was found that Google image search had labeled a black couple as gorillas. So these are examples of rather ugly things that popped out of the internet. Now, what are the reasons for these things? The unprofessional hair controversy. Certainly on the internet, somewhere there was a picture of a black woman with a tag that said unprofessional hair. It may have even been in an article that discussed the idea that the concept of unprofessional hair was racist. Mm. But yet that tagging of an image existed. What I'm saying in the book is someone did that, a human being did that. Then an algorithm will generalize from that. It will basically say, well, here's something that's been tagged unprofessional hair. I will take this and use it as a prototype and then look for other pictures like that and call them a professional hair too. That's where the problem comes in. And since an algorithm looks at really gross features of images like size and shape, African-American women's natural hair is very noticeable in an image. It's just because of size and shape alone. So things like that, it will tend to concentrate on. And the thing I'm trying to emphasize is this, is the nature of racism is to simply say simple and easy to notice visual features can be tied to categories of people's behavior or capability or value. Now, the thing is unprofessional as a concept is a very complex concept. But when you have algorithms out there tying that complex concept to simplifying features of images, undoubtedly you're going to get things like this happen.
So the very nature of human racism is being reproduced by the simplicity of algorithms.
And intensified. Reproduced and intensified.
Amplified, yeah. And so the argument from the tech industry might be, we just need to make our algorithms better. Can that be done?
And undoubtedly, they do need to make them better. And there are angles for making things better. But one of the things I do in the book is I go through history a bit, history of science, and in particular, social scientific ideas about people. And what you find is when we started, even starting with Darwin, soon after Darwin, there were a lot of social Darwinist concepts that brought in things like statistical measures about people and statistical categorization of people that ultimately led to the development of the field of eugenics, which was started in Britain, was taken to America and then taken to Nazi Germany. And it's the science of basically controlled breeding of human beings for better results. Of course, now it's something that people have deprecated, but at one time it was a very accepted liberal scientific philosophy. The thing I show in the book is a lot of the statistical concepts that are used in algorithms, today's algorithms online, on the internet, are concepts that come from that kind of statistical appraisal of human beings. So my point
is it's not necessarily that these programmers are saying, let's be eugenicists. It's just that's if you write an algorithm, you end up going down that same path.
Exactly. And moreover, when you tune the eyes of simplification and generalization, which is what statistics and algorithms are about, simplification and generalization. When you turn that lens towards people, you have to exercise caution because inevitably that has been always closely tied to racist and intolerant philosophies. History shows us this. And those tools can be used usefully, but they have to be monitored very carefully by human beings so that they don't come up with these highly simplifying conclusions about people. Now, the thing about algorithms that is scary is that now they are much more automated than they were and much more autonomous. And sometimes we trust them really quite blindly. So they could end up generating these results that are really dubious with regard to categorizing people. But because we've taken our eye off the ball and called them artificial intelligence and given them all this power, effectively we have this risk that they're making our society more divided.
So the moral of the story is that just as it is wrong for individual people to make generalizations about other people. You have, you know, one person that harmed you in some way, and that person happens to be East Asian. In your mind, your frail human brain decides that all East Asian people are going to be treated with suspicion. Just as that leads to racism and is wrong, an algorithm in categorizing, in attempting to categorize people, is going down that same path, which sort of leads to the conclusion then that we should not categorize people on the internet, which also then automatically leads to this idea of maybe the internet shouldn't be used to make gobs of money for big corporations.
Yes, exactly. Because the idea of optimizing value, economic value, generating more money, is the kind of unipolar focused drive that will basically dominate everything else. It's a single value of maximizing profit that dominates everything else, and that will have a tendency to hide these kind of gross characterizations of people, because people's intelligence is, and people's nature and society is much more sophisticated than that. When we turn an unsophisticated philosophy of humans' nature is the kind of philosophy we associate with intolerance. And when we basically have a economics driving algorithms that intrinsically have that simplifying nature, then we have a really quite dangerous situation.
And you know, you might hear from proponents of the way things are now that you have to have some sort of algorithm because everything is so data driven. But I remember back when Facebook first started, and I think I might have joined 10, 15 years ago, you saw in your Facebook feed the posts of everybody who was your friend in the order that they put them in. That was it. There was no trying to refine or filter your feed based on what it thought you wanted to see or what Facebook thought would make Facebook the most money. Your friend posted something, it showed up on your feed. Another friend posted something, a second later it would show up after that. Boom, it was pretty straightforward, right? So it can be done without relying on these algorithms.
Yes, and we can even be more proactive than that. I mean, the thing is, when broadcast media was first created, things like the radio, in fact, the radio very quickly was monopolized in small communities and then used for political effect. And that's the reason the Federal Communications Commission came into existence, effectively, and the Fairness Doctrine, in order to basically prevent the narrow bandwidth that existed in the airwaves from being exploited to exploit people politically. I would argue what we need now is not just to go back to the old days when Facebook wasn't driven by adverts, but basically Facebook is a media company. Twitter is a media company. These are media companies. They need to be regulated, but they need to be regulated in a way that recognizes the dynamics of the nature of the medium itself. In particular, going back to the unprofessional hair example, one of the really funny things about it is if you Google unprofessional hair now on the images section of Google, you'll still get pictures of Black women. And the reason is because this news story became so dominant that now you get pictures from the news story. And those sorts of feedback loops between people and machines really intensify this effect dramatically. It's the feedback between our existing prejudices, what we see online, how that makes us think, drives things very substantially. So you need regulation that's sensitive to that. And you need to make these companies, I think, basically, instead of being just profit-driven, they have to be public service-driven, because they are occupying our attentional bandwidth. We only have so much attention, they're dominating a lot of it, and they can use that to effect that can be quite negative. And in fact, since they're corporations that are profit-driven, they're always going to just try to maximize profit. It's their job. And until you have the government step in and basically say, it's a media company, media should be regulated, you're not going to get any progress with regard to change.
So let me ask you this, Robert. The algorithms themselves are biased toward bias, but doesn't that amplification of bias also have a ripple effect in society that's incredibly dangerous? For example, I guess what I'm trying to say is somebody who's prone to being incredibly racist and white supremacist, seeing that racism and white supremacy amplified, finds legitimacy in their ideology. Does this not, to use this idea of a feedback loop, amplify racism and bigotry within our culture as a whole?
Undoubtedly. We've done some studies at the university I work at that that have shown this. There have been many studies around that basically show that polarization is a natural effect of social networks. What I would suggest that our work has shown is that the reason for that is because some participants in the network only broadcast one point of view, and then they come to influence other people who get a majority of points of view from people like that, and they become more like that, and that propagates and propagates. But the thing that I'm trying to emphasize is these algorithms are participants as well, and they are trying to emphasize a single point of view because it works, because it makes you click. And because of that, they have amplified this effect of developing what we call echo chambers, and the fact that echo chambers are polarized, that they run, their boundaries run up against each other and then divide, and so that people don't speak to one another. They will block or unfriend or not pay attention to, and you get division. And once you've got people divided, then they can be manipulated. And my argument is the reason we've seen things like Cambridge Analytica, and we will see it again in 2020, is and the Russian troll farms, is because the nature of the media makes it so effective. It's not because their AIs are so very smart. It's because we've changed the way we absorb media and isolated ourselves more and made ourselves more vulnerable to these kind of effects.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Robert, for joining us today. Really appreciate your spending this time and educating us on this issue. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Robert Elliott Smith, an expert in artificial intelligence. He's worked on projects for Oak Ridge and Los Alamos National Laboratories, the National Science Foundation, NASA, and more. We've been discussing his new book, Rage Inside the Machine, The Prejudice of Algorithms, and How to Stop the Internet Making Bigots of Us All. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.